Blog Talk Radio.
Anomalous Entertainment, in association with Blog Talk Radio, present to you the Sasquatch Experience Radio Show. Hosted by Sean Forker, Melissa Hovey, and James Baker. Join them as they take you behind the scenes and conduct investigative reports and facilitate discussion into research on one of the world's last great mysteries. Bigfoot research. No holds barred. Begins now.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Sasquatch Experience for Sunday, August 24th, 2008. This is Henry May sitting in for Sean Forker. We do not know where he is. He seems to be MIA tonight, but I am joined by Melissa Hovey and James Baker. This is the 100th episode of the Sasquatch Experience, and we're going to We were scheduled for an hour, but we decided we're only going to do an hour tonight, and we're going to open up the phone lines to you good folks out there. It's going to be an open mic call-in show. So those of you who have questions for us, or if you just want to talk, the number is 347-996-5814. Of course, you can also use your click-to-talk feature, which is at the top of your chat room, or you can always instant message us at giantape20042000@yahoo.com. Melissa, James, I know usually James has something for us. We're going to turn it over to James for the segment, the weekly segment we call The Bake Shop.
Well, thank you, Henry. One, I'd like to thank all our listeners that we can have a 100th show, because honestly, they're the ones that make this happen, I mean, at the end of the day. This week on The Bake Shop, I actually pulled up some of that wilderness survival stuff from before, and I found a really cool article from the Boy Scouts of America. They say there's 7 priorities for survival in an emergency situation. Now, I'm not advocating that, you know, you go out in the woods and you always have an emergency situation. What I'm trying to say is when you're out in the woods, be safe, be prepared. So the 7 things they say to do is, 1, have a positive mental attitude. Stay calm. Don't panic. Panic doesn't help anyone in any way, shape, or form, and actually it can create a bigger issue. First aid, treatment of yourself or others, life-threatening or dangerous conditions first. If somebody's bleeding, shock, if there's dehydration, hypothermia, it matters what the situation is and which one's going to be the best option. But in general, you want to make sure that first aid is your primary concern, because you want to make sure everybody's healthy through the whole situation. Shelter. Protect yourself from the elements. If you want to, when you go and look at these 7 things, which are on the survival skills book I got from the Wikipedia, or you can, I will try to get them on my blog this week. My MySpace account is not working right. It's jamesbwild@myspace.com if you want to check it out. But what you want to do is, if you have more than one person, you want to break into teams and kind of break this down to whoever, like say, Henry, naturally your ability is to build a shelter. We would pick you and a couple other ones to help you while maybe we went for food. Fire is very important for warmth and signaling. Signaling is number 5. It's communicating with searchers or other in the area. Signals can be anywhere from marking a tree to taking shiny objects and putting them somewhere so that people can see the glare from a distance, from making an obvious noise that someone, you know, needs, or even, you know, as stupid as it sounds, if you have a radio, starting to use it, do things like that. Always want to make sure you have water. Make sure, at least in Pennsylvania, and I'm sure that the other states are the same, we have the giardiasis. You want to make sure that you boil all water that has been collected from streams. Now, if you collect it from do, or you collect it from a secondary source from a plant, you may not have to boil it at all because it could be safe water. Treat all water as if it's unsafe to make your life easier, because if anybody knows much about giardiasis, it's not a positive thing. And the last of the seven is food. We all need to eat. Henry,
yeah.
Have you ever had a situation where you were kind of not survival for the fittest, but, I mean, you've been out in the woods and things have gone, you know, maybe not as well as they should have. I mean, do you have any tips that might help somebody, you know, with things to think of?
I've had a few experiences like that. One of the main things I would say is obviously don't panic. Don't go into, you know, do not go into panic mode when you're out in the woods, you know. Never go alone. That's another thing. Never go alone.
Always make sure somebody knows where you went, too.
There you go. Exactly. Make sure somebody knows where you are, too. I would say take a cell phone, but sometimes cell phone coverage in the forest or in the deep woods is not as great as you might expect it to be. So, you know, it's always good to have a good flare gun just in case, you know, somebody needs to look for you or trying to find you in the woods. You know, I would say definitely have a flare gun, have a good first aid kit.
And that's one thing.
Go ahead, James.
That's one thing we mentioned about our Squatch kit. The one key element to my Squatch kit is a basic, or at least a good first aid kit.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that.
Exactly. I would concur with that. No doubt about it. Was there anything else, James?
No, I just wanted to see if Melissa's opinion on the Boy Scout 7 was, and if she had any further questions about it.
Well, I can tell you that one of our team members in the TBRC, because where we go here in Texas and Oklahoma and Louisiana and these places, you know, the water sources in these areas are not the best. The water gets pretty stagnant in the summer, and it gets pretty nasty. And one of our team members, I don't know if it was up in Area Y or Area X, actually contracted that, what was that, you called it, the giardiasis or whatever the heck it is?
It's a brain parasite.
Oh, well, this guy, something that he caught, it actually went into his intestinal tract. And he was sick for a very long time. I think that the comments that you made about taking water and making sure that the water you have is safe to drink is something that I'm always telling people all the time. Always, if you think you have enough water, pack some more, because you can never have enough water if you're out in the field in the summer, because you just don't know what's going to happen. So, and you have to have water to survive. If you don't drink water, you're not going to make it out of there. And that was one of the very first things that I learned when I became a member of the TBRC, and it was something that I didn't pay attention to, and I actually did get sick from not drinking enough water. So, folks, it's good advice. Make sure you have plenty of water, and when you're sure you have plenty of water, pack some more, because you can't live without it, and it will make you sick if you run short. So I think that's really good advice for people.
The typical person needs 2 to 3 liters of water per day. So, I mean, you look at, if you're going to be out 3-4 days, even if you think you're going to be near a stream, bring a few gallons of water just in case that something doesn't work out. And the article that I got from the Survival, it actually shows you how to use, like, cellophane. If you have some cellophane or even a plastic wrapper that you can put it across a rock, and in the morning it'll collect dew.
All right.
You know.
Well, you know, and another thing I think that people need to realize, there's so many of us out there who rely on GPS devices and things like that to mark positions and guide our way through the woods. You know, something that people have to understand, too, is either if you're going to rely on one of these types of things, pack enough batteries to last you a few days if you get lost. And then, secondly, I definitely went out and learned how to use a compass anyway. Because,
yes.
You know, because if you get with somebody who just got their GPS device and they're not exactly sure how to use it, you could be in some real trouble. Rely on the old and true methods that have worked for God knows how long. It's not going to kill you to learn how to use a compass and just keep it in your backpack just in case. And even if
right.
you get separated from the person who has the GPS device, it, you know, it's just a little bit extra to make sure that you're safe and you can get home in one piece.
And GPS is not infallible.
And I'm proud to announce that our host has finally arrived, Mr. Sean Forker.
Yeah,
what up, Forker?
Sorry about that delay. We got delayed, and I'm here now. Thank you, Henry, for jumping on so promptly and getting the ball started.
No problem.
Thanks for you to be back, Sean. We were just talking about the seven things that the Boy Scouts state you need to really survive a wilderness expedition. If you know, I don't know if you caught all that. Main things were to keep calm, get shelter, get good food, get good water, find ways to find a make a signal, also find ways to make fire. You know, I thought maybe we'd get your thoughts on it.
Well, you know, James, I'm glad you're doing this. You know, I think there's a lot of people that, you know, do this as a passing habit. And, you know, they should really be prepared for, you know, some of the more dangerous elements, getting lost and getting stranded. You know, things do go wrong. And, you know, thank you for, you know, talking about this topic tonight.
Well, you know, let me pass on one more tip that when I first heard about it, and I know everybody's probably going to laugh at me, but when I first heard it from somebody that I go into the field with often, which is Monica Rollins of the TBRC, everybody laughed when I first told them about this, and I laughed when she first said it to me. But it works. Go to your laundry room prior to leaving for the field and grab a fistful of your dryer lint. It makes great kindling to start a fire. I was frankly amazed at how fast that fire took off with the dryer lint. So, and that's something else that you can keep in your backpack in a sealed container. You know, it's a plastic baggie will work. And if you should get into a situation, or if just back at the campsite and you're having trouble starting your fire, throw in some dryer lint, set it on fire, and you got a fire. It's great.
Yeah, and that could be put in a small container next to a fire-making kit.
Right.
Yeah. And another thing, a good point that you made, Melissa, is know your environment, know how to be able to tell how to get to a different location, like know how to read a compass. Go to Gander Mountain. I've learned a lot from the Gander Mountain people because the Gander Mountain people have actually taught, you know, actually teach you how to read the signs, how to do different things. So, I mean, I'll be honest with you, you also can learn not only about your environment, but you can learn about other, you know, get other people more involved.
Right.
So, go ahead.
Well, I'm interested to hear what Sean has to say.
Okay, well, I was done anyway, so go rock on there, Sean.
All right, bear with me, folks. I'm piecing together a few pieces of a puzzle here.
You've got puzzles?
I'm just jumping back into things, so forgive me for kind of being on the fence. So, James, anything else from the bake shop you got tonight?
No, we're good. Just be safe out there in the wilderness because we want to make every experience in the woods a positive one.
Yeah, you know, James Baker, thank you for hosting the topic. Okay. Melissa, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Sean. And yourself?
Oh, it's been a hell of a night. I've been pretty busy, so I apologize for being late once again. That's our 100th episode, guys. How about that? 100 episodes.
Wow.
You know,
well, I can't say that's 100 for me because I joined late, so...
It hasn't even been 100 for me. I think Henry actually holds the most record for most episodes.
Yeah.
Wow. We're going to have to break that record of Henry's.
100 more episodes, and we'll find out. Henry, thanks for joining us tonight. Appreciate it. You know, a lot of people...
Oh, you're welcome.
Henry is on. Well, you know, Henry, you know, quite, you know, frankly, volunteered to open the board and get things running while I was, you know, being delayed, and I appreciate that. But Henry was also one of the people that, you know, helped me start the Sasquatch Experience. And, Henry, why don't you tell them why we started the Sasquatch Experience?
I'd be glad to. well, what happened was Bigfoot Central, which was on artistfirst.com, it was probably the only, longest-running weekly Bigfoot internet radio program. Started about 1999 or 2000, and went through various hosts over the years. Most recent host was M.K. Davis at that time. M.K. Davis and Don Monroe, and all of a sudden, Artist First canceled Bigfoot Central at that time. So there was just kind of a glut of Bigfoot radio shows on the internet. There was, and then of course our good friend Steve Cole, Squatch Detective, started Squatch Detective Radio. And then Sean and I were kind of inspired. We said, well, heck, if Steve can have a show, why can't we? Why can't we pool our resources and do a radio show also ourselves? So it kind of started with a few ideas, and we got together, Sean and I did, and we figured, why not get together and do a few episodes and just test the waters, see how it goes. We've had some tremendous guests over the course of the 100 episodes. I think my favorite guest was both times was John Green. Both times we got to interview him, I thought the whole idea of having this this once a week program was just a terrific idea. Now, of course, you've got pretty much what you might call overkill. I think there's way. I think that Steve's show and our show kind of started the ball rolling, and everybody started coming out of the woodwork and having a radio show.
Pardon.
There's a few exceptions, like Melissa Harvey.
Oh, thanks,
Dan. Pardon?
I said there's a few exceptions. Melissa Hovey's is a great show. Melissa. Basically, that's the whole genesis of the Sasquatch Experience, and I'm honored to be part of its 100th episode tonight, because it was Sean and I that kind of got the ball rolling on it.
Well, Sasquatch Experience came at a time when Bigfoot Central was making its exit, as you said, Henry. And you and I were both avid fans of that show and kind of felt the void going on. As you said, Steve Coles had his show going on, and, we figured we get on a happy alternative to that. And quite frankly, I think we've been one of the more successful Bigfoot shows. I mean, we've done a lot. We've had the gambit of guests. We've talked about the topics. Sometimes we've, maybe had guests on we shouldn't have had, and maybe we've had some callers that have called in that we shouldn't have had, but regardless, every week it's been fun for me to dial in and put together one of these shows for everybody that listens. It's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it. I have a couple questions for all of us tonight, and since we're here, we can all discuss them at a round table if everybody's up for that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I guess, Melissa, since you're the newest one, and you've been a really impactful host that we've had on the program, we'll start with you, and the question simply is, are we leaving a mark?
Well, first of all, did you say that I was the tactful one?
I said you've been one of the most impactful ones.
Oh, well, that's probably true. did we leave a mark? You know what? I would have to say yeah. Yeah, we have. we really, since I've gotten involved, I think that we've really started to ask some tough questions. We've hit some topics that were not really topics of conversation. And we have not shied away from difficult conversations. And I think that is important for this community. I mean, every so often I think we need to step back and reevaluate where we are. And I hope that that's what we're doing with this program. And I think that some people are seeing that is our intent, to step back every so often and take a good look at what we're doing in this field of research as a collective community. I don't know for sure that that's happening, but I do think that that is, I think that is a mark that we are leaving. Maybe I'm wrong, but I really don't think that I am.
Henry?
I would concur with what Melissa said. I think the Sasquatch experience is leaving a mark. I think it's, you know, it must be if it's got over 100 episodes already, you know. I mean, or if it's up to 100 episodes. I would concur with what Melissa said, everything she said. I think there have been some tough questions asked here, and there have been some great interviews, and I think some folks have kind of, you know, said, oh, I'm not going to listen to that show. They're too controversial, or they're too tough. Well, sometimes you got to be tough, you know.
James?
Well, I would say in general that we fill a need because otherwise we wouldn't have made 100 episodes, and I think that we have because I know that there are some subjects that wouldn't have been covered if we wouldn't have been there to ask the question. I think that in general, at least my contribution and everybody else's, I feel that we contribute something special to the group that also translates well to other people because, you know, I think we as a group, we show them that, hey, you know, this is about research and that, you know, because I get a lot of it at work and I'll admit to it. I mean, the fact is people say, oh, well, you believe in Sasquatch. And I say, well, you know, I believe in the potential that there is something there, but I've never seen anything. And I explain to them my views on it. And I think honestly that we keep things realistic when they're all around us. There's rumors that this happened and this happened and this is on the news. And I think that we break it down so that the average person that doesn't know much about the subject says, yeah, that sounds better than what I heard on the news. And I think that's where we leave our mark.
You know,
yeah.
I'm always ambivalent to the fact if we leave a mark or not. I think it all depends on content. You know, you guys know I'm not always the most PC person. And a lot of times when, you know, my emotions get the best of me, I let things roll. There's a lot of gems in that when it happens. And it's the fact that, you know, you can always count on me to speak my mind and to be honest. And I think that's one of the things we have in this program that I appreciate is honesty. And you get it from me, you get it from Melissa, you get it from James, and you got it from Henry. And
well, you know, people may not like what we have to say, but at least the majority of the time we have the guts to say it.
Yeah.
And that's why I like doing the program that I do with Monica. You know, because we don't play those verbal mind games with people. There are no games. And I don't do that here, and I think the best way to handle other people is to be honest, be absolutely honest with how you feel. Sometimes the truth hurts. Sorry.
And Melissa's entirely right. You know, and I think the other thing that, you know, we try to do is we try to have fun. Because this, although it's a very serious topic, I think at times we can take ourselves too seriously.
Yeah.
And when we forget to laugh at ourselves, then, you know, we've lost a very important piece of this research. Because I think one of the most important things to have is a sense of humor.
Exactly.
And, face it, folks, as much as some people don't like to hear this, most of us are out there chasing an ape that may or may not exist.
Yep, and we're cool with that.
And James is right. James will tell you, when I'm out in public,
he's proud.
I don't hide the fact that I research Bigfoot. I turn it into a conversation piece, and I love it. Mm. People have so many questions. They start off laughing, but at the end I've educated them on something.
Yeah.
Because I roll with the punches, and I just enjoy it. I have a lot of pride in being a Bigfoot researcher. I have a lot of pride in being part of the Bigfoot community. I'm not always going to be the poster boy for perfection in the Bigfoot community, but I really do enjoy being a part of this wonderful community of ours. We may fight. We may do things to each other that aren't so pleasant, but at the end of the day, we're all after one common goal, and that's finding Bigfoot.
Right.
And how much fun it's been for me, I cannot describe in words. All I can tell you is I'm enjoying every moment of it, and I plan on enjoying every moment of it as long as I'll be in this research, and that is until I'm in my 80s, being pushed around in a wheelchair, wearing my Depends, still looking for the damn thing.
And Sam, you better lose weight because I'll probably be the one pushing the chair.
And that's always a possibility. And this goes into our next section, keeping the focus, which is always something we have a hard time doing, keeping the focus. And the focus is, you know, BS. You know, no holds barred commentary onto the research and the events going on in the Bigfoot community. And I think we felt pretty true that. We keep to that focus. James?
Yeah, okay, my turn first? All right.
Then Mel and then Henry again.
I think that we keep, honestly with us, is I think that we focus on research, but I don't think that we have a specific focus for the group, and I think that gives us a better dynamic. We kind of roll with what shows up. Like if we get a bunch of people that say they saw this thing and we saw this thing in Florida, then we kind of, you know, we just hit on Florida and see what also went on there. And I think that we more rove than we have a specific, like, area. You know, so I would say that we're focused on the subject of Bigfoot, but we're not focused on a certain concept, if that makes sense.
Melissa?
Repeat the question again.
Have we kept our focus? Have we kept true to our mission? And that's a no holds barred commentary on Bigfoot research, and you know, the recent news and breaking news in the Bigfoot community.
Oh, I'd say we've done well in that perspective. I mean, you know, like, you know, take the most recent situation for example. Yeah, we had our moments when, you know, that day, that phone call between you and I mean, it was one of the most difficult conversations you and I have ever had. And there was a lot of back and forth between you and I, and we needed to discuss this. And, you know, I mean, we weren't the only ones involved in the conversation, but nonetheless, the truth is what we want to discuss for this program. And I, frankly, was relieved to know that you felt the same way. And I think it's important because if we're out here saying, you know, we're honest and we want the truth and da-da-da-da, we should be willing to display that regardless of how difficult it is. And, you know, sometimes, like I said, the truth is a very painful thing to have to handle. And it was a very hard thing for you and I, but at the same point, it had to be done. It had to be discussed. And in the future, I'm sure that we'll have more situations like this because, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, this community is filled with secrets. It is. Most conversations are prefaced by saying, don't tell anybody I told you this, but. And, I mean, if you're a person that's involved in this research and you've never heard that said to you, I would like for you to email me because I have never heard that from anybody. Seriously, that is how all conversations start in this. And so, I mean, it's tough. It's really tough. When do you come forward with what you feel is the truth, and when do you not? And you and I had to make a judgment call, and we just decided to let the chips fall where they may. And I think that we held true to the mission statement of this program, to be honest and truthful, no holds barred. And, you know, I can sleep with myself knowing that we did the right thing.
And that was a hard thing. I think so. It was really hard for me because I broke a trust that, but at the same time, the information was necessary to get out there.
Right. You know, and that's the one thing that people don't discuss in this, though, and I touched briefly on it here a few seconds ago. When is it okay to break a confidence, and when is it not? Because, I mean, as you well know, Sean, you became the target of a lot of anger. From both sides of it, because one, because we did break the trust, and then secondly, because we knew and didn't say anything, or we knew something was going on, but we just didn't say anything at all until we had all the facts.
For people, and I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but for people to say that we had knowledge that we didn't have is a completely falsity. I had the knowledge Saturday night, and there was a period of less than 24 hours where I knew the truth, and we didn't break it, and that was because we were trying to get together, you know, the pieces that we had from my limited conversations I had. And it was a nine-minute conversation, folks. That's not a long time. A lot can be said in 9 minutes, but not enough to solve a whole damn mystery. So to accuse some of us of knowing more than we did, you know, is complete bullshit. And ridiculous. I had the information I knew. I shared it with Melissa before we went on air, and we made the decision that we needed to get this out because the community deserved it.
Yep. And I was there for that conversation, and I'll be honest with you, the most problem we had with the conversation was not what, it was not that we weren't going to say it, but it was that we wanted to say it in a certain way that, one, it didn't ramificate back to us negatively, and two, so that everybody got the full information and nothing was rumor, that we were 100% on what we were presenting.
Right, and negative ramifications being a lawsuit by, you know,
and that was our only concern, was a negative ramification, because that would, at the end of the day, make it that we wouldn't be able to broadcast. And really, bringing the truth is phenomenal, but if we can't continue to bring the truth, you know, sometimes you got to take that whack, you know.
You know, people can make the accusations all they want that people were trying to cover up for people, and Melissa can tell you folks that beyond a shadow of a doubt, specifically for my character, because I was the one that was pretty attacked on it, I didn't hold the truth for anybody.
Well, you know, and what I find funny about all this is the fact that we're not the only people in this that are accused of keeping secrets. We're just the only ones that it's being pinned on. There are so many secrets in the field of Bigfoot research that are being kept. People know. People know these things, but nobody ever talks about it. And when you find yourself in the position where you want to make sure that you're being honest with everyone and you bring forward this kind of stuff, you make yourself a target, whether you're doing the right thing or not. And I find that very frustrating. You know, it harkens back to the old phrase, you know, don't kill the messenger. Well, we were only the messengers. We weren't involved. Neither Sean, I, James Baker, or anyone else was in Indiana. None of us have a connection. We don't have any ties to the Searching for Bigfoot organization. We have nothing. So, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the attitude directed towards us was, it fell on deaf ears, because there are so many people out there from one end of this country to the other keeping secrets about what other people have done, that it just, and it directly ties into the research, that it just, you know, it makes me roll my eyes into my back of my head, and I'm surprised they haven't stuck there yet, to be honest with you.
You know, for the record, any research that I have, I share with everybody. I don't keep any of my research secret.
Usually about a day later, we have a video.
Yeah, James likes videos. I know that's kind of weird, but he likes videos. And hopefully, folks, you'll be able to enjoy some of them pretty soon. You know, they're nothing special, nothing fancy, but James and I like to do them. And, you know, they're a little informational videos on what we're trying to do. And that's a tangent. But, you know, information is something that, you know, for the longest time has always been spread, you know, on internet forums and lists, internet lists, email lists. And the nice thing, the wonderful thing about Blog Talk Radio is it's made that blog more personal, because you get to put a voice behind what people are saying, and you get to understand that better. A lot of times on forums and blog lists and whatever, you don't understand the voice and the connotation that's coming behind the words.
Right.
Yeah.
And here you can. You feel the emotion that's being shown forth through the message, and that's the key and part of communication, knowing, you know, the meaning of the words by the person speaking them. And I think this is a tremendous tool to do that. Go ahead, Henry.
Guys, we have a caller who is patiently waiting for us. He's been on the line for about 10 minutes. That's our good friend Bill Green. So I'm going to go ahead and bring him on. Bill, you are on the air with the Sasquatch Experience. Sean Forker, Melissa Hovey, James Baker, and Henry May.
How y'all doing? Congratulations on the 100th episode.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. But what's your psychological effect on this whole Georgia body hoax nightmare mess situation and beyond?
My psychological effect is we're going to move on from this after tonight, hopefully.
I honestly stepped back from that the moment I realized it wasn't true. I mean, it's not even interesting me anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Bill, do you mean the psychological effect on us personally or the psychological effect on the community, Bill?
Both.
Both. Oh. Well, I mean, for me, it makes no difference because I really didn't believe it to begin with. But I think for the community, I think it's pretty bad scar.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, this has personally been impactful on me because it's really made me change the way I look at things. And
well, Sean, when I first saw the thing in the ice thing, you know, it had me fooled at first, too. I mean, you see the head, it looked authentic. Then the body, something just didn't look right about the body. You know, and then this press conference with all these people who I won't mention on the air. If you guys want to, you can. But, you know, just sounded a little fishy. And it's just like, then look how much press coverage this thing is getting still. My God.
Bill, put it out
there.
Put it out there, Bill. Everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know, but I'm trying to be neutral here. But it's just to the point, every day I go on Google News or Yahoo News, and I see all about this corpse, or fake corpse, whatever. And it's like, by golly, I'd like to see something positive about Bigfoot, you know, or any cryptozoology animal, you know. And it's just, it gets to you after a while, but, you know, I just figured, hey, why let it get to you?
Well, Bill, it's really not working out. It's really not worth it.
I just called to congratulate you guys, and I hope other people call tonight. And keep up the good work.
Well, I think the important thing to realize is there has a time where we have to start moving past this. There are people.
I agree with Sean.
There are people that are working on the answers, and if you want those answers, you can go to the various forums they're being discussed about. We do no justice by keeping the conversation going on this. We know at the end of the day what the situation was. You know, those who had roles in this, you know, and how far deep they were in is still yet to be uncovered, and it will be uncovered soon. I was as cooperative as I could be in the investigation. I gave all the answers to the questions I knew. I didn't hide anything. I gave my phone records. Melissa, you know this. I was as, you know, forthcoming as I possibly can be on the information I know, because I'm not doing any justice by speculating on anything.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I'm just, like I said, I'm ready to move on from all this, you know. Really, I know a lot of folks are ready to move on, and I'm sure all three of you are ready to move on too.
Well, just about. I have to deal with this one more time, and then that's it.
Poor Melissa was supposed to be on vacation this week.
Yeah.
Yeah,
guys,
and
we got another.
We've
got another caller from the 541 area code. That's Oregon. Hello, 541. You're on the air with the Sasquatch Experience. This is the 100th episode. Sean Forker, Henry May, Melissa Hovey, James Baker. 541. You're on the air.
I'll put them back on mute there, Henry. Maybe they just dialed in to listen to the show. Maybe that for some reason... Blog Talk Radio isn't working.
Oh, wait, they're still muted. Wait a minute. Or did
you
mute them?
Good job.
Okay.
Maybe they just, you know, want to stay on. If they have something to say, they can, you know, send us a message or, you know, hang up and then call back in.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead, James.
So, we were on a question, and we never got a chance for Henry to answer the question because we jumped the bill. So, what was Henry's answer to the question? We might want to repeat the question.
And the question was, keeping the focus, do you think we've, you know, stayed online and keeping the focus on what we said we were going to do? You know, no holds barred commentary, no BS on the Bigfoot field, research and the latest news.
Yeah, I think you have. And I think that when I was one of the co-hosts, or when I was the co-host, yeah. I think we did keep the focus. There were things that, you know, kind of threatened to take us off focus, but you know, I think we did a pretty good job of keeping the focus, and I think that you know, with your new co-host Melissa, and also with James, you guys have kept the focus pretty well.
Well, thank you, Henry.
Now, you know, it's funny because I have to say this, and maybe we can laugh about this, but you know, Henry and Melissa and James and I, we all did the show for a couple weeks all together. And, you know, I think the real thing that caused that separation was the whole MK Davis issue.
Yeah.
And that was the first time we really tackled a situation like that in depth and seriously. And, you know, it caused a lot of fallout, but it was really important that we discussed that because at the end of the day, I think we really exposed the motives behind what was really going on in that situation and maybe, you know, showed forth some light in, you know, what agenda was going on there.
Well, regardless of how people may feel about the MK Davis situation, and I got into a lot of hot water for defending MK, which maybe in retrospect I shouldn't have done. I mean, but he was a friend, you know. I felt like people were personally attacking him rather than just attacking his theories, you know. And I felt like you know I had to speak out against it. But as I said in retrospect, I wish I hadn't. And I apologize to Melissa. I've apologized to Melissa on numerous occasions, and I hope Melissa and I can try and get along.
Well, you know, the important thing is, though, you know, we got to discuss it. And the important thing to know is that we're not always all going to agree on the situations, especially in, you know, what the evidence shows and what the outcome is. Everybody is a person. They all have their own unique vision and from every experience.
Yeah, you know, and I totally agree with that, Sean. I mean, and I think that, you know, and I'll bring this up again, is my friendship with Monica. Monica and I don't agree on everything. And I like talking to her about my opinions and my theories and my thoughts because I want to hear a honest opinion. I want somebody that's going to say to me, you know, Melissa, I really think you're full of it right now. I think that it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life, but this is why. And, you know, I mean, but I can handle that. I can handle that type of criticism. Some people can't. And, but I think it's important that people be able to understand in this that even though your opinion might be wrong and somebody is telling you your opinion is wrong, that doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It just means you need to rethink your theories and your opinions. But, no, I mean, I personally prefer people to tell me, you know, I think you're wrong. I think you are absolutely wrong about this, and this is why. What I don't think helps anybody is when you get the attack where it's personal and there's no constructive criticism behind it. It's just, you know, you're wrong and you're a horrible person because you said it's wrong. Well, you know, where do I go from there? No, if I like people to disagree with me, but give me something to go on. That's what I think we need more in this community.
And sometimes people need to be told they're wrong.
Exactly.
Because they
exactly.
just don't.
Go ahead.
I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Melissa, but I think, you know, people just don't get it.
Right. Well, yeah, and, I mean, how do you know that you've strayed off too far? You know, I mean, and one good example is Eric Beckyard. Eric Beckyard didn't start out believing that Bigfoot could disappear or jump into wormholes or anything like that. Eric Beckyard started out as a flesh and blood researcher. Somewhere along the line, and I think that this happens with a lot of researchers, they make this a switch gets flipped in their head, and I don't know exactly when it is, but somebody should have, you know, really gotten in his face and said, you know what, this is nuts. You need to stop. You've got to reevaluate this, and this is why. I don't know if anybody ever did that, but you know, we may not have had him like he was all those years. I mean,
maybe
people on the back, huh?
Maybe he drank tainted water or was Lyme disease. I don't know.
Well, who knows? But I mean, at the same point, it's one thing to tell somebody they're wrong. It's another thing to tell them why they're wrong. And we don't have enough of that.
I agree with Melissa on that.
You have to. I mean, you know, she speaks the truth, and that's one of the reasons why she stays on the program. As much as people, you know, and this is where we're going to, you know, get into the next topic, you know, the host and the experiences we have had and our contributions that we all uniquely bring. You know, she brings a lot to the table in terms of, you know, investigating, because she's thorough. And that's going to be my final thought on that. But first, we're going to, you know, Henry, we'll let you talk about, you know, some of the experiences you have had and the contributions you made to the early days of the program.
Well, I was able to, but there are some controversial comments going on in the chat room about, well, we're not going to go there. A lot of people are saying that we shouldn't speak ill of the dead or something like that.
Who's speaking ill of the dead? We're just merely stating fact. Eric Beckyard did believe that Bigfoot could, in fact, go into wormholes. He did believe those things. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what he thought. That was his personal opinion, and he's entitled to that. I'm just saying that we can't even prove the animal exists, so why even have that conversation, number one? You know, I mean, something happened along the line. And M.K. Davis didn't start out believing these things about Patty either. You know, bullet wounds and yada, yada, yada. But somewhere along the line, this started to happen. You know, and it doesn't help when you're hugging people and telling them that what they're doing is just fine. You have to reevaluate these things. And we don't hear enough of, hey, you know, I think this is wrong, but this is why. Constructive criticism is so important for this thing.
Yeah, you have a perfect point. I mean, I think everybody every so often needs an intervention. You know, you need to really think of this maybe a different way. Maybe you want to do something else. But I think every so often we just need to, you know, somebody to walk up to you and kind of smack you in the face and go, what the hell? You know, and I think that if you can't count on your research partner to be that person, then you don't have the right research partner.
Exactly.
And James and I hit each other a lot.
And Monica threatens me every day, so.
But it's necessary, though, because you keep it balance. You know, you often talk about you and Monica. James and I, you know, we do everything in this Bigfoot research together. You know, research, hike, investigate. You know, we do it all. But at the same time, we do it as a check and balance system because James sometimes can be a little bit more skeptical than I can, and he looks at things uniquely. And sometimes I'll tell James he's missed the mark completely, and I'll bring him back to the beaten path. And I think that's where having a good research partner comes in handy. And we bring that experience to the show. And the thing is, with all of us, we're not afraid to tell each other what we think.
And I think that's what works for all of us. Is the fact is, like, there are times that we're out in the field, and there's a random question that I wouldn't think of that Sean would, and then there's a random question that Sean would think of, but he would never ask a researcher, when I would just be like, hey, why can't we poke it with a stick?
Why can't we poke it with a stick? And, you know, there's also, you know, an unseen relationship that goes on, and I don't want this to explode tomorrow all over the internet, but Melissa and I have had a long-standing working relationship with each other for the last several years.
Yeah.
And she's never afraid to tell me if I've stuck my head up my ass.
Or, no, I'm not.
And if I've missed a mark. And trust me, folks, we've had a lot of conversations, but, you know, and it all relates back to one of the first things I said is honesty. And I'm very proud of this program because the one thing I can always say is we speak on the truth and we're honest.
We're still getting some controversy from the chat room about supposedly picking on Eric Beckyard.
Tell him to suck it up.
It's, you know, this is the thing. Eric Beckyard, you know, was a son of a bitch, that's for sure. But at the end of the day, he was our son of a bitch. And he was a little out there. Nothing you can do about that. He made a lot of people's lives miserable. But you've heard me say many times that, you know, as miserable as a person is, you never want to see anything horrible happen to him. And it's a shame that Eric Beckyard was taken from us in such a horrible way.
Yeah,
but at the same time, you can't change a man's legacy.
No, you can't.
And the one thing you always have to worry about in this field, and anywhere in life, not just this field, is the mark you leave on life.
I just got a PM from somebody who left and said, and the show continues its bashing ways.
Well, you know, Henry, ignore them. You pay way too much attention to the noisy negativists.
Yep, I would say so.
You know, every show's going to have its critics. It's never going to be a perfect show. And tonight's show is not about Bigfoot. It's about us. 100 episodes of us talking about Bigfoot. So in a roundabout way, it is about Bigfoot. It's just not for the topic of tonight. So anybody who tuned in for a Bigfoot show may be a little disappointed, but this is our chance to celebrate and, you know, take a look at ourselves and what we've done and what we've talked about and what we've contributed to the field. Because really, folks, if this show's not contributing anything, then why are we still in existence?
Well, and I'll tell you right now, for those that are upset about the whole Eric Becker thing, if there really is such a thing as an afterlife, I can guarantee you right now that Mr. Beckyard is smiling down upon us now saying, yes, they said my name again. That man was great with getting his name out there. I don't know anybody who could have done it better. So I can guarantee you, Eric Beckyard was never insulted by the things that were said about him. So
Eric often, reveled in the fact that he was a pain in the ass to a lot of people. And, whether you like the descriptions or not, those are descriptions he used of himself. Self.
I was one of his biggest critics, and he sent me some of the nicest emails because I wouldn't stop talking about him at one point. So, he didn't mind being called names. He didn't mind it because it put his name out there, and it still put his theories out there. So any publicity is good publicity for some of these people, and whatever. He made a name for himself off of it. And if he's up there right now looking down at us, he's happy because he's being talked about still. So,
One thing I said that right after Beckyard passed away and it pissed a lot of people off was the fact that he challenged us. And many people, disagreed with that. And I think I'm absolutely accurate on that. He challenged us to think outside the box. Whether we did it or not was entirely on our own volition. But he gave us, substance to chew on. I looked into the things he said. I looked into the names he gave us. Do I believe in them? No. But it doesn't mean one can't understand it. And, to understand one's argument and to counter that is entirely different than to personally attack somebody.
And, on a positive note, we're saying he's looking down on us, not looking up.
Right. Yep. Okay, so how did we get sidetracked? What was the question?
The question was the hosts, our unique experiences and contributions that we all bring to the table. And James was talking, and Henry and Melissa, it's your turn.
Well, actually, we do have a caller from the 757 area code. I think I know who this is. So we're going to bring him on. 757, you're on the air with the Sasquatch Experience. Sean Forker, Henry May, Melissa Hovey, James Baker.
Good evening, everyone.
Hey, John.
Good evening.
Hey, JC.
Congratulations to all of you, first of all.
Well, thank you, JC.
Thank you.
And my question was, you might be getting into this in a little while, but, I wanted to know from each and every one of you a highlight and a low light of your time on the show.
Mm. Well, was it a low point or a high point?
Both.
I think it was both.
And congratulations, and I'm going to get off the line now.
I can say the lowest point for me was announcing the death of, one of the researchers in the community, Dan Buchanan. That was pretty tough for a lot of people because that came as a complete shock.
That was a low light for me, too. I have to say that. I mean, I didn't know Dan as well as Melissa knew.
Well, and that was the problem. A lot of people started just getting to know him when he was taken from us, and that was probably one of the, toughest things. It was the first time I ever publicly had to announce that someone left us because he deserved that announcement because he was, bringing a lot of information to the table, and Melissa can talk a little bit more about that.
Hmm. So what was the high point, Sean?
Oh, sorry.
Well, Melissa.
My bad.
Oh, boy. Wow. I first met up with Dan on the Bigfoot forums, and I wasn't quite sure what to make of his story. I found him incredibly abrasive and wasn't really sure what I thought about him. And then him and I started trading PMs and emails, and then he agreed to come on to another program that I co-hosted. And I got to know him better during that conversation. And we still continued to trade emails, and we talked, and there was a project actually in the works when he passed. And when I got the news, it was a pretty hard moment in my life. It really was, because here this guy, and I'll say it now, he was in the process of working with an artist at the time of his death. And we had already received back some rough drafts of the creature that he says that he has seen. And it wasn't even a week later he was killed tragically. And it was one day that I just don't want to relive. In fact, I still have a message that I sent to him that's in my message tracker on the BFF. And Dan made a huge impact on me. He really did. He was a good friend. And it was really tough when we lost him. And so, yeah, I still think about him a lot. And I think about him when things are rough. And I know what Dan would say to me, because he was there through some things, and he was just a really great guy to everybody who knew him, and I wish there was more like him in this field of research. I wish that every single day. So, and then, of course, we lost Tim Cullen, too, here just, you know, a couple weeks ago, so.
Yeah.
Which was another hard-hit community.
Yeah, it's been a pretty rough year for those of us in the community, so, you know, who knew these people. And whether you want to or not, eventually, you know, you start getting attached to these people. And I hear people say all the time, you know, it's just an internet message board, but you develop friendships that extend beyond the internet, and you talk to these people by phone, and some of them you meet. I've met, you know, Brian Brown, I've met Kathy Moskowitz, I've met all kinds of people that are involved in this research. You know, Tugboat from the BFF. And after a period of time, you can't help but to start to care about these people.
You
so,
do, because they're more than just a name. They're
right.
People.
Right.
You know, they all have everyday struggles that we have. You know, they all have lives. They all have families. And that far transcends anything that we go through in this community.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times that even when things aren't going so great in the community, when we lose somebody, everybody comes together. And for once in a while, the person becomes more important than the mission. And that's a very sobering experience to go through, that we can disagree on everything. But, you know, when we lose one of our own, we all take it very personal.
Yeah. And we also all seem to come together when three jackasses decide to pull a hoax on us. And yes, I said three.
Well, you know, we also have to take a look at, you know, one of the questions posed to me was, you know, the points in the show. A highlight for me was interviewing John Green. My God, the guy got me started in this research. And Henry knows I was so nervous. So nervous in interviewing John Green the first two times. In fact, I think the first two times I did interview him, I absolutely sucked. But I had the privilege of interviewing him again Friday night. And it was probably one of the best interviews I've ever done, because I've become comfortable with my hero. And, you know, regardless of what people think of John Green, you know, I consider him that, because he was my inspiration for getting into this. And kind of the reason I'd like to try to make, you know, a little journalistic venture into this, because, you know, somebody's got to chronicle all this.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's what we do. We're chronicling the events, sometimes as they happen, sometimes after they happen. And that's a very important piece, you know, of the memories of the community. We have to preserve them somehow, good points and bad points.
True.
The next question, I guess, you know, is a show like this needed? Is it necessary? And anybody who wants to can go answer that question. Just, you know, someone can grab at it first.
I think it is necessary. I think as many programs as we can have out there that discuss this field of research, and the honest work that's being done by good people, the better our chances of getting good information out to the general public and to the media. They'll have somebody else to go to other than Thomas Biscardi, you know, or whoever else, you know. So, I mean, yes, these programs are necessary. They're absolutely necessary. And if people want these other bad media figures to go away, you got to give the media somebody else to go to. And getting these names out and getting this, getting the good information out there is the first step in doing that. And I think these programs are necessary.
I agree.
James?
I think she hit the nail on the head, and honestly, I'm the same way. I think that we are, the fact that people are listening proves the fact that we need to be here, because if we weren't relevant, we would have no one listening. You know?
And, you know, I can't even, Melissa says everything so well. I always feel like a nitwit trying to compete with her. That's why I always talk first, if you notice.
I thought that's why you let me talk, to make you feel better.
No, James, if I wanted to sound like an ass, I'd just put a donkey on the line.
Oh.
Oh, but, no, in all seriousness, you know, we have a purpose, and, you know, are we needed to? Some days yes, some days no. I think people get tired of hearing the same thing. And with so many Bigfoot shows on the out there today, you know, we try not to all be the same. And I think what makes us different is that we'll tackle all the issues, no matter how controversial, but we won't do it half-assed. We won't do it without the information. And I think that's what's important. Oh, you know, we have a relationship with our listeners, and they know what to expect from us. And, you know, the commitment of honesty that we have and the fact that they'll know what we know, I think is probably the best thing that we can possibly give them in terms of content. And we have to be entertaining. As much as people want a science-based show, if you want science-based shows, listen to NPR, okay? This isn't your granddad's Bigfoot show.
Right.
Yeah.
This is, you know, a show for, you know, people that are generally interested in Bigfoot and the community, because whether we like it or not, folks, as many of us, you know, sillily want to be looked at as individuals and, you know, judged on what we do, we are a community. And we are seen as a community by the general public. If you think I'm crazy, look at the Georgia incident. Look what that's done to us. The media portrays not those Bigfoot researchers, but all Bigfoot researchers, as desperate people that'll do anything to keep on to their dream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm not comfortable with that.
Oh, I'm not either.
You know, what we try to do is bring a voice to the credible people out there that, you know, share to the fact that, you know, we have a responsibility not just to ourselves but to each other. And though we might not always agree on what that message may be, at least we get our message out. We're not silent.
I have a question for Melissa. It's regarding something, you know, legal, you know, in regarding a little bit of legalese. You know, I did my show, HBO Crypto Corner, earlier today, and Steve Coles actually called in, and he called out Biscardi. He said Biscardi was one of the hoaxers. Legally, what can Biscardi do if somebody, you know, gets on a radio program and calls him a hoaxer or something like that?
Okay, well, let me make this perfectly clear, first of all, to people that are listening. Number one, I'm not an attorney. Okay. Number two, I am not an attorney. Number three, I do not give legal advice.
Okay.
Give legal advice.
I am not an attorney.
Okay,
but let me just say this. Steve Coles is entitled to his opinion. He can say whatever he wants. If he has not signed any non-disclosure agreements of any sort, but then the non-disclosure agreement all depends on what it specifically covered. So, I mean, and it's hard to cover a personal opinion in a non-disclosure agreement. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. It all depends on what Steve signed and what it said. So, I mean, I really can't answer to that. But I think Steve knows, and I don't think Steve would have said it if he had done something that would put him in legal jeopardy. So
he's not dumb. And you know what?
No, he's not.
you know, screw what Tom Biscardi thinks at this point. I could really give a rat's ass what he has to say. He's done more damage to this community than any group of us could possibly even think about doing. So what he feels right now and what Biscardi thinks is completely on the bottom of I don't give a damn list.
Well, yeah, and, you know, and people also have to remember, too, that Tom Biscardi put it out there when he went on the national news. When Tom Biscardi stood up in front of a podium for Fox News, CNN, and the world, he put it out there for speculation, not just speculation by those closest to him, but also for the general public and the media to decide and form an opinion about. And so he kind of brought this on himself. I mean, if you don't want people to speculate about you in the news, then, or on radio shows or anywhere else, then the best thing to do is keep your mouth shut until you have all your ducks in a row.
So he really has no legal grounds to sue anybody over their personal opinion, even if they express it on a radio show or a blog or something.
Well, like I said, I mean, that all really depends on the type of agreement that Steve signed. But Biscardi did make it fodder. Yeah, right. But Biscardi did make it fodder for public opinion the second he took it to the media. So I don't know. I mean, it really depends. It really does depend. But I can't imagine that Steve would make a statement like that if he was bound by a contract that said that he couldn't make those types of statements.
And you know what? I hope he keeps making comments like that because people need to know the truth. Whatever that truth is, I don't know. I wasn't present. But I'm tired of every time someone's saying something that all of a sudden we have to be worried about a lawsuit. I mean, yeah, it's a realistic fear, but you know what? Being a liar is a lot harder to look at in life in the hole on your conscience than being someone that said, you know, screw it and tell the truth, regardless if it was inconvenient to somebody or not.
Well, but I mean, do you honestly believe that Biscardi would win a lawsuit where somebody said that
because
he was a hoaxer?
You know, plain and simple, the facts of the matter is the world knows this whole situation, you know, was a hoax. And, you know, it's not a crime to say something is a hoax. You know,
especially when the person involved says it is.
And, you know, and if it's, you know, I don't think it's a crime to call someone a hoaxer. I mean, you know, hoaxing something's not considered a crime.
No, it's not.
So, you know, rather it has a negative connotation or a positive one, you know, people call me a jackass every day of the week. You think I care? No, they're entitled to that opinion.
It's badass, not jackass.
Shut up, you.
We have a caller, guys, from the 518 area code. 518, you're on the air with the Sasquatch Experience 100th episode. Sean Forker, Melissa Hovey, James Baker, and Henry May.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, Steve-O.
Hey, I just wanted to clarify something. I didn't sign anything with them on this issue at all. So,
okay.
Just wanted to FYI you guys that. But, yep, tomorrow on my show, you'll be hearing it's called Biscardi on Ice. And very thin at that.
Shaken or
well, hopefully crushed. So, but I just want to let you guys know that. I know there were some questions about whether I signed any. I haven't signed anything throughout this whole ordeal. In fact, I've never seen Tom Biscardi throughout this whole ordeal. I've never met Witten or Dyer or any of those fools. So, but the full sit rep will be out there tomorrow night. And thank you, guys.
No problem, Steve. Man, that was Steve Coles, the Squatch Detective. He's promising tomorrow night to put Tom Biscardi on ice, ladies and gentlemen. So that should be quite the interesting program.
Got an hour and a half show tonight as we move on to the next question is, folks, where do we go from here? What's next for us?
Boy, isn't that the $64,000 question?
It is. Well, where do we go from here? You know, we can keep going on, and
I personally like keep on keeping on.
And James likes the fact that he can keep on going on. And, you know, as the fall comes, I get out there more in the field because I think in Pennsylvania that's when activity tends to pick up a little bit more. It's conference season, so there's always a lot to talk about. And you get out in the network and meet people and, you know, you talk to people and say, hey, you know, I thought what you did was great. I thought, you know, I hear what you're doing, and I like what you're doing. Come on my show and talk about it. Or, you know, I think our listeners really need to hear this, and come on, you know, maybe they have some questions that you didn't think of, and, you know, it's always a good networking opportunity to get out there and do these questions. And go out to these conferences and bring these people on and ask these questions. Folks, you never hurt by asking questions.
Ew.
And I think that's what we need to do. And I think we also need to start looking into the past of Bigfoot a little bit more, because the only way we can move on is to understand where we came from. And there's still a lot of questions about, you know, some of the beginnings of this research that we don't understand. You know, a lot of the films and a lot of the evidence over time that's been collected and discarded. Why was it discarded? What could we do today that maybe shed more light on that evidence? There's a lot to uncover and a lot to do. And, you know, as long as there's something, you know, to this mystery, you'll be rest assured we're going to be discussing it. James, mm-hmm. Melissa, any thoughts?
James, why don't you go ahead?
Well, I'm same with me. I'm kind of just keeping on. I think that we're diving more into the research to get, one, a better understanding, and two, to present a better view to people, because I think that's the biggest thing me and you have talked about, Sean, is it's hard to talk about research when we're sitting in a chair reading a book compared to what we've learned out in the field. So, I mean, honestly, I think from here on, we're going to be in the field more and contacting our listeners and other people to get a better reference of what's the heartbeat of what's going on compared to just kind of sitting back and, you know, reading articles. That's all
yeah,
I got.
And a lot of times it transcends reading articles, but information is information, and it's, you know, another one of the promises we made to share the information, and we like to do that. Share the information, you know, get the facts, and put it out there, and give opinions on it, because I think that's one of the things that none of us here on this line are afraid to do, is give an opinion on something. So if I had a question for one of you guys, over the last couple years in this, you know, field, and so I'll direct this question to you first, what's been the thing that's ticked you off the most?
Wow. I'd say I know I'm going to get grief for this. I would say I have been very frustrated by the inability to discuss why we have had 40 years of not much. And, I mean, the lack of desire by people to discuss that simply blows me away. I'm not going to say that we don't have anything. I'm not going to say that we have nothing, because we do have some things. But we have not had much in way of progress in 40 years. And that is what frustrates me, is in just the fact that nobody wants to discuss the methods that are being used and why they're not working. And I think that that's an important conversation for us to have. Really do. So that I find very frustrating.
Well, there's a lot of things that really make me angry. And you folks get to hear them as they come from my mouth. But I think the most, you know, time I've ever gotten angry wasn't even on our show. And that's when I had a conversation with, you know, Eric Beckyard that didn't turn out so well.
Oh, yeah. That was on the Squatch Detective.
And, I have to make one thing, you know, clear here real quick, because there's some issues going on in the chat. People, you're entitled to your opinion, you know, but you just can't go around making baseless accusations. The proof is in the pudding. Put up or shut up. You know, the situation's gone on too far. And, you know, I'm tired of, you know, people that have a half-assed interest in this Georgia body hoax, you know, going in ankles deep thinking they've got the answer to everything when they really just have their hands in their pocket playing pocket pool. Get a clue or get the heck out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not at my computer, so you're going to have to tell me what's going on.
It's just, you know, this recent Georgia body hoax, and everybody thinks they have a, you know, inkling on who the players are and what their roles are exactly defined. And the fact of the matter is this, folks, you know, regardless of your personal opinions, you know, the information on everything, and Melissa, and you can attest this because you've been doing a lot of information, a lot of research on this, is very shaky at this point.
Well, the only thing that's not shaky at this point is the fact that Tom Biscardi is involved, the Georgia boys, the two Georgia boys, and we now know who the financial backer was for this fiasco, and that was William Lett. So those are the only things that are known for sure, that and the fact that this is a hoax. It was a hoax, period. Plain and simple, there's no discussion about it. I don't care how real the teeth looked or the tongue or whatever. It was a hoax. It was a very elaborate hoax. It was a very good hoax. But nonetheless, it was still a hoax, unfortunately.
Man-eating chicken.
They just mentioned, listen to this, they just mentioned on Adult Swim about the searching for Bigfoot stuff. On Adult Swim, they usually have these little bumpers right before they go to the program or something or come back from the program. They actually mentioned it on Adult Swim. I'm like, wow.
Hmm. Okay. Like I said before, any publicity is good publicity, folks.
And that's a good Family Guy episode, so we'll get a lot of publicity off that one.
Oh, good God. You know, and that's the question we always ask, where do we go from here? Hopefully onward and upwards from this damn, you know, Georgia body hoax. You know, let the people that are doing the investigations into this investigate, and then the evidence will be presented in full once it's done. Speculating's not doing anybody any good. You know, it doesn't hurt to ask questions, but make sure they're logical questions and not blindless accusations.
No.
And that's the last I'm going to say on the issue. Moving along, we got a question from Dan W. Dan asks, besides the recent Georgia body hoax, what other incidences have caused black eyes of the community?
Oh, well, there's another one that involved Tom Biscardi a few years ago. There was the supposed capture of, up in, what was it, Stagecoach, Nevada. And, Sean, we've talked about that a few times. And of course, you know, he goes on Coast to Coast AM on August 19, 2005, and says, "We have one in captivity. We have one in captivity." And then the next day, it's revealed on a blog, you know, that it never was true. That there was no Bigfoot. He goes on Coast to Coast 3 days later and says, "Well, I was duped. I was fooled. I was hoodwinked. We were hoodwinked." You know,
well, But the full story was that he had one Bigfoot in captivity in what was it, you say, Stagecoach, Nevada.
Right.
This actually went on, though, I think, though, for more than a week, because he came back later and said on another program, well, it was the same program, I believe, Coast to Coast, and
it
said that
Coast
he had not one, but
two. Yeah.
He had a male and a female. And then he said, when it was finally over with, he told on Coast to Coast, that the veterinarian in charge of the care for this animal had let the animal escape.
Yeah.
So, and he said that this animal was holding a glass of water and drinking out of the glass.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, and would hand it back and ask for more. And it was amazing. It was simply amazing that people, and then he announced, "I have a camera, webcam set up so you can view these Bigfoot in captivity for a price." So it was quite interesting.
Yeah, it was. Another incident, I would go back to 2002, late 2002, when Ray Wallace died, and the media picked up on the fact that, well, that means Bigfoot's dead. There's no Bigfoot. Ray Wallace invented Bigfoot, you know. Which we all know that's not true, but the general public thinks that. They think, you know, there are people who may ask you today, you know, wasn't that all proven a hoax? Wasn't there a guy who created all the footprints and things like that? And also the 2004 when Bob Hieronymus came forward and said, "Oh yeah, I was the guy in the suit in the Patterson Gimlin movie." You know, those were two other black eyes on us, I think.
Well, and then you're forgetting about the best one, which was the Sonoma video.
Yeah, that too. Oh, yeah, that too, the Penn and Teller deal.
Right. And then didn't the Manitoba footage come out as a hoax too here just last year?
I don't know if it came out as a hoax. I know it's a Blob Squatch. I know that.
I think it was the Manitoba or something like that. It came out as a hoax. A guy in a hoodie.
I do not know about that, but
maybe I'm wrong, but I think it did. One of them did. One of the ones where it was a dark figure and it looked like they were wearing a hoodie.
There might have been something about that. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that one and get back to you guys next week.
Okay.
Well, it was the one that where the person paid, or was the person received $200,000. They were actually paid.
Full amount?
Pardon?
Was that the one at the ridge?
Yeah, but it wasn't the Star Mountain footage. Not that one. Not the one where it was at the top of the mountain.
I'm thinking, is it the one that was it was a photograph?
Right.
I'm trying to think of what they called it. I don't remember.
But the person that had it, right, the person who was in possession of the photograph actually was paid $200,000.
Well, the Bobby Clark thing, that was a video. The Bobby Clark thing was a video, actually.
That was Manitoba.
Right.
Yeah, that was Manitoba.
And that was along a riverbank.
And it was too far away to get any detail from it. You couldn't see anything very much in that.
Melissa was talking about something different, though. It was the it escapes me.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I'm trying to remember what it was, and I had it and then I lost it, and I thought it was Manitoba, but I don't know that it was for sure. But let me research it and I'll get back to you guys next week.
That sounds great.
Other hoaxes.
Other hoaxes. Oh, good God. Penn and Teller hoax. Did we talk about that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sonoma footage.
Oh, good God.
John Fred has uncovered that for us, fortunately.
Henry, there was also on the Old American Bigfoot Society website, you and I had a list of video and photographic evidence, correct? And some of it we had listed on there as a hoax.
Yeah.
And that's a good resource. It was a good resource.
Yeah, it was. There were several hoax videos and hoax photos and things like that. And those are all listed in a book called Big Footage, A History of Claims for the Sasquatch on Film by a fellow named Mike Quast. It might be worth looking him up on the Internet. He privately publishes or self-publishes his books. He wrote one called The Sasquatch in Minnesota. I highly recommend his books, by the way. They're hard to get a hold of. They're hard to find, but I do recommend them.
Well, you know, you think with so many hoaxes, we'd be able to rattle them off like they're, you know, nothing.
Yeah.
See, and it just goes to show that when you want to talk about a subject, you know, you never have the, you can't put the pieces together to talk about it, just like these hoaxes.
What is that most recent one, the Tamagotchi Island or something like that? Something like that?
Oh, yeah. Turned out to be for a movie.
Yeah, this came out, and within 24 hours it was busted.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you got to give credit to the people in this community, especially those who hang out on the Bigfoot forums. They're really good. They're really good. So.
Carry on with the discussion here, folks. I'm trying to pull up an interesting email we got from a listener here for some time back, and I want to share that with you. Squiggy. Whatever happened to Squiggy? And I'll let Henry and James talk about that.
Oh, my Lord. I think Squiggy came along before even James came on board as a host. I know Sean and I remember him. He called in a few times claiming, you know, that... claiming that he'd been hit in the head and woke up and had milk in his mouth.
Yeah,
oh,
that
God.
Was actually... There was a couple shows like that that happened, and the one that didn't, there's a couple that didn't record, but the one involved the gentleman saying he woke up with a fluid in his mouth, and I said, Jesus Christ, man, you know what you've done? You've just swallowed the DNA sample. And that show never archived. It's sorry to say that, but anybody who's been listening to the show for a while would know about that one. So, you know, Squiggy's called in and provided us with a lot of fun.
I miss Squiggy.
Yeah.
You always know when you're in trouble when the phone, you know, you get ready to get the caller on the line, and he starts off his story by, one night I was out with some friends and I felt a big rock hit me in the back of the head. You always knew then you were in for a lot of trouble.
I went downhill really quickly, and it was funny as hell.
Yeah, it did.
And you know what? Those shows taught us stuff. You know, it's exactly what we've always pointed out, is we can't make fun of ourselves. We're taking it way too seriously, and we're losing perspective.
Yeah.
You know? And like Melissa said, maybe this is where some of the other researchers that may have went over the bend started getting over the bend, because they took it way too seriously.
I think as I said before, that's one thing we always have to do is, you know, really examine where we are and realize what we're doing and know that, you know, we have to attack this with a little bit of humor. Humor is paramount.
Yeah.
All this and everything we do. And I'm trying to, this email came from a woman in England who listens to our radio show at a different, she can never catch it live, but she always listens to us in the archives.
Yeah, I remember you forwarded that on to me. That was
a
very nice email.
And it's from, and I won't mention her name, her full name. It says, "Hi, Sean, Melissa, and James. I'd like to let you know how much I enjoy your show. I'm completely new to the Bigfoot subject, so even if you feel like you're going over old ground on your show, to me it's all new and interesting information. I had no idea there were so many encounters over the years and so much evidence. When I told my husband about some of the sightings I heard on about your show, he said they must have been bears. I think this shows how the media over the years has encouraged a culture of instant dismissal and, worse, ridicule of witness. I live in an urban part of England, so the chances of me ever looking for a Bigfoot are less than zero, so I am relying on you and the Bigfoot community to find one for me. From Julia." And that's the reason we do the show, folks.
That's nice. That's nice.
People like Julia. You know,
yeah.
For some that listen that are diehard, you know, that are diehard Bigfooters, yeah, sure, we've talked about this 40, 50 times. But Julia doesn't have that privilege, and she relies on us to discuss it. And I think, you know, the fact that she took the time to tell us she appreciates that, you know, is a true testament to the mission of this show, and that we are achieving that by getting out the word of Bigfoot and telling people that it's okay to believe, it's okay to look at the evidence, and, you know, it's okay, you know, to ask questions. Yeah, you have to, because when we stop asking questions and start speaking, you know, in fact, without having a body or any real evidence, we have a problem. And keep the questions coming, folks, in the comments, like, especially like these. And thank you, Julia, because they keep me going. They keep me interested in Bigfoot and getting answers for you, because I'm an investigator. I research sightings. I go out and I do research. But, you know, I'm interested in this from the aspect of, you know, people's personal experiences with Bigfoot. I think that there's something people are seeing out there. Hundreds of thousands of people have seen this. We can't all be crazy.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we got about 2 minutes left in our 100th episode of celebration, guys.
100th anniversary.
Yeah, 100th anniversary. We'd be old by then.
Well, some of you would be dead. I still might have a chance.
Yeah.
Hey, now. Hey, now, come on.
Hey, I keep your memory going. Don't worry. I didn't bomb you guys and sit you here next to me. That's just gross. It's creepy.
I knew you were a necro.
Hey, now you see, and that's that line we talk about crossing that you're not supposed to do.
I didn't swear.
It's these things you expect from James Baker. It's, you know, it's why we keep him on. The spontaneous things he says that scare, for, you know, the longest time, our listeners thought they were listening to a show about bears. And some of them were scared because James was making them afraid of bears.
Hey, you got to be afraid of bears. Nature's killing machine.
Yep. Well, I just want to tell you, I really enjoyed, and I want to thank Sean for letting me be part of the 100th episode, even as a former co-host.
Well, you know, we appreciate you coming on, Henry. You know, more often than not, you proved your worth to the team. That just sounds mean. But you've been a part of the team, and you'll always be a part of the team because, you know, you helped me start this. We're going on 2 years in October, Henry. 2 years.
Yep.
And I tell you, I've enjoyed nothing more than coming on to this show each and every week and talking to all of you about one of the things in this world that mean a lot to me, and that's the quest for Bigfoot.
Yep.
Melissa, James, final thoughts.
Well, it's been an interesting ride so far, so let's see how much more we can talk about and do something to hopefully shake up this community and get more conversations going that are new and exciting, and hopefully we'll go somewhere with this.
Time to raise some hell, folks. Raise some hell.
Yeah.
James, any final thoughts from you?
Let's...
I know you don't have any, but...
Hey, you're going to get yours later, F-bomb. Okay, all right, I'll see you guys at the 200th episode, and I'll tell you honestly, it's been a good ride, and we should just keep on going.
Henry, final thoughts from you. Any words of encouragement to us that you have?
Just keep on keeping on, and y'all be good or be good at it.
This has been the Sasquatch Experience. Sasquatch Experience, folks, 100 episodes. On behalf of Henry May, James Baker, and the lovely and talented Melissa Hovey, this is Sean Forker saying, keep on squashing, folks. We'll see you next week.
Rock on.
Thanks, folks.
Good night.